Hey, Lex Coach Mike here, LexCoachMike.com. Guys, you're going to love this podcast. Premium guys, love you to death. Thank you for all the support of the site. Crossover guys, thank you so much for sponsoring this podcast and your support of our site. What do you say about a coach like Ray Rosten? I mean, really, you know, 338 career victories in his 37, 38 season, you know, maybe 40 years of coaching. 2002 was an assistant coach, defensive coordinator for the national team that won the World Lacrosse Championship. He's been the recipient of the Babe Krause Award, D3 Coach of the Year twice, voted Old Dominion Athletic Conference Coach of the Year four times. Just a great coach with a lot of great stuff and so respected, right? I mean, he was a member of the NCAA Lacrosse Committee representing collegiate lacrosse. He's chaired the USILA men's north-south game. Just so on and so on. Anyway, in this podcast, there's some great stuff. Premium guys, I think, are going to love the way he's integrated. We all kind of struggle sometimes, don't we, with how we integrate the picks and the pick and rolls into our motion-oriented offense, whatever that means. And we spent a lot of time here on how he does that in 4v4. There's a lot of great drills in here. We feature a 3v2 crunched in the soccer circle in the article section. Without further ado, man, I am so humbled by your support of my site and so thrilled to have an opportunity to talk to Coach Ray Rosten, Hampton, Sydney, right before his final season and literally days after he was awarded the Frenchie Julian Service Award at the recent IMLCA. He's received every award there is to receive. Anyway, without further ado, Coach Ray Rosten, Hampton, Sydney.
Hey, Lex Coach Mike here, LexCoachMike.com. Big day at the world headquarters of LexCoachMike.com. We got Coach Ray Rosten back. To my remiss, we just haven't been able to hook up. Last time we had him was in 2011. Go back and listen to that podcast and read that article. Respectfully, Coach changed the way I coach after 35 years in that podcast. We started to implement a lot more skeleton passing and skeleton offensive drills, which I had done a little bit but never done until Coach convinced me of the merits and all the ways they keep that interesting with different looks they do, and almost a replacement for the line drills. Before I welcome him, let me also say we try and keep these timeless, Coach, so people can listen to them at any time and learn stuff. But a couple days ago, Coach was recognized with a Frenchie Julian Service Award at the IMLCA conference, which again is just one more testimonial to how people that are in the lacrosse network and people in the know feel about him. Without further ado, welcome, Coach Rosten. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, it's great to be here. Great to be here. Fresh off the Coaches Convention up in Baltimore this weekend.
Yeah, I was just talking about you recently, man. I had I did a coaching clinic in Chattanooga, and the guys from the Baylor School and the McCauley guys were down.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, so I think you had two coaches at McCauley.
Yeah, Ava Thornton. And Elliot Dent is out at MUS, I believe. Yeah, or MUS. Yes.
Do you ever keep track, or do you have a general idea how many guys have played for you and now coaching?
Yeah, it's kind of cool. There's probably 40 guys out there, I'd say, Mike. You know.
Yeah, I don't think your son counts because he's been there like 100 years at Hampton.
13 years. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I was listening to our previous podcast. And I think at the time you had been there, you know, 30 plus years or 34 years or 35 years. Obviously you're 40th now, but I mean, you were saying when you first went there, your son was 1 year old. And I think time, or 2 years old or something, you know, and you were talking about, you know, how it was a great place to raise kids on the campus and all that. But I was laughing when I was preparing for this podcast, you know, because I know he's been there double digits now as a coach, you know, let alone as a youngster. So.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, Mike. I'm sitting here watching the Salisbury Hampton Sydney game from '87. So it's been here for a while. I'm not watching. I'm recording the film, but yeah, it's been great. I've had the assistant coaches I've had. I think I've learned more from those guys than anything. Dave Webster up at Dickinson and Bobby Wynn up at Salisbury School, in Connecticut. Those guys are just such awesome guys. We've got two guys up at Princeton right now, Matt Madlin and Steve Grossi, coaching up that way. Jake Plunkett's the head coach at Muhlenberg now. It's too many to mention, but really a great group of people out there in high school and in college.
So. Well, and a testimonial to you. Coach, I was, when I was reviewing the first podcast, you know, kind of in retrospect a couple years later, you know, it was interesting to me. You know, one of the dialogues that I had was trying to nail you down on a skeleton, if you will, for a practice plan. And we talked about, you know, Massera's 1 hour of fundamentals, and we had some fun with Coach Massera. I had mentioned to you I'd actually been, you know, to one of the few ever, you know, Massera-run coaching clinics, you know. But then, you know, as kind of a precursor to what we've seen on the site over the last 2 years, you know, you were not so much locked into a practice philosophy of transition versus even though you were still running a fair amount of 6v6, I think, at the time. And interestingly enough, we have coaches that run a lot of 6v6 and guys that don't run much, not much in between. But you were kind of adjusting the practice plans to where you thought the team was and what they needed at the time. And I didn't catch it in 2011, but now that we're in 2015, moving into 2016, you were pretty progressive in that thought process, you know. And what I didn't ask you that was missing from that podcast, though, is when do you plan your next practice? You do it after practice the night before or the next morning? Are the assistants involved? Can you speak to that point a little bit, Coach?
Yeah, definitely, Mike. I think the, you know, I don't think I planned the practice the night before anymore because I tried to definitely involve the assistants as much as possible. So
right.
We'll get together, you know, first thing in the morning and just talk about the day before and, you know, like, probably like everybody else does, and then just start planning our general ideas for that day and then getting it down on paper. But I'm not a guy that's pulling out the practice plan from the year before and sticking. Well, I think we stick with a plan, certainly a general plan from the year before, et cetera. But, I think it's a year to year thing. I know that I feel like a two hour practice, you know, is long enough. I think we'll go sometimes two hours and 15 minutes. You know, our kids, are on the field, goalies are on the field a quarter to four, 10 to four, face-off guys. But we'll have kids in class until 4 o'clock a lot of days, 10 to four. By the time they get to the field, it's 4:15. I don't want to miss the stretch for those guys. So, you know, we might go till 20 at the 6 some nights, and some nights I'll just call it at 6 o'clock. And, you know, when you really look at that, it's hard getting a full 2 hours, sometimes 2:15 in. And again, I'm much more conscious now too of keeping practice a little shorter than that at times. Just keeping guys fresh, as much as they would. You know, they want to go longer toward the end of practice when you do those fun things, but I like to keep it fresh for them as well. But,
you know, Coach, I bet you in the last, year and a half or so, we've talked to maybe 10 coaches that are more in the 90 to 100 minute practices.
Right.
You know, and obviously the fur is flying, and vis-a-vis, you know, the NCAA stipulations, that probably does not include shooting. You know, they're responsible for that on their own, and the goalie work doesn't count in there. But, I mean, even from the time they stretch to when they go is 90 minutes. I can remember the first guy I heard it from was Matt Kerwick when he was at Jacksonville. And he's going, man, where is this heat, you know, and the humidity? And I know Baltimore's got heat and humidity. I get all that. You know, I've been there a million times coaching in the summer. But at the end of the day, you know, Jacksonville could be brutal, you know.
Right, right.
And he's going, man, at the end of 90 minutes, the coaches didn't want to go anymore. The players didn't want to go anymore. And even up at Cornell, you know, they run a lot of 90-minute practices. He's found that if they put a stronger emphasis on the sequence and what they're doing at practice and really make the fur fly and keep the pace up, that 90 minutes is good enough.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it's hard. It's hard getting it in 90 minutes when you put a stretch. You know, it's interesting. Some coaches don't stretch a lot. I think most do. You know, we had a great basketball coach here a few years ago that's at William & Mary right now. And the kids were expected to stretch on their own, you know, and when practice started, it was bang, bang. But I do feel like we have to spend a little time doing that. So we'll start practice with various warm-ups, you know, face-off guys, defensive guys doing some drills and, maybe shooting, maybe some, five-man skeleton, moving the ball, making big turns, moving it around the outside, getting warmed up, and then we have everybody there. We're going to do our stretch, and you know, I try to keep that moving, that stretch a little bit, so we can get right into things. Otherwise, we don't have enough time to practice.
Coach, when you come out of stretch, you go right into a transition to get the pace going, or do you do some kind of station?
Yeah, I think I've moved to that a lot, and you know, try to get the pace going, get guys excited a little bit. So we'll do a full field 5-on-4 drill, you know, with defense and offense. You know, there's one drill. We might do a short cage 4-on-3 game type of thing. We may do a full field skeleton, you know, passing drill.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think with the number of guys, you and I were just talking about that, how big the teams are getting. We had 61 last year. This year we'll have about 52 on the team type of thing. And with those great numbers, I feel like you've got to get into an offense, defense, full field type of thing, to get everybody going. But, you know, we'll do various things like that. And then from there, once we have that fun, then we'll move more into our fundamentals and maybe some defensive work and then offensive work. It could be offensive skeleton work. It could be, and that's where you said before, you know, it's what are your needs at a certain point of the year? You know, we're opening up with Salisbury on February 6th. We got to be able to catch and throw under pressure, you know, so we have 2 weeks to prepare for that game as a team. We're going to spend a lot of time, you know, just full speed, going at a good pace, five-man skeleton, pop it in, pop it out, catching, make big turns, protecting the stick, and then we'll do that with some pressure on ourselves, you know, either with our five long poles or you know, 3-on-3, 4-on-4. You know, whereas later on the season, now maybe we're doing more, you know, skeleton offense and putting our plays in around our base offense. We're teaching our offense, obviously, early in the year. So it changes to how, you know, deep we're going. Or maybe we're working on catching. Maybe we're, you know, catching's the big thing right now. The kids, you know, it was brought up in the clinic the other day that kids will take 100 balls and shoot the ball, but they're not catching the ball all the time. So,
interesting point, huh?
Yeah, that's a good. I thought that was a great point that somebody made at the clinic.
Well, and I'm still. You'd be proud of me, man. I'm. You know, I should have like a. I love Coach Rawson patch I wear under my jacket when I coach. You know, because we spend a lot of time focusing in our skeleton work. Thanks to you, like I said, I learned so much from you. You know, running to or through the pass and running to the catch. The one comment you made that I've not been able to implement, you were talking about a basketball coach that had them call the name to the guy they were passing to, even when you were doing your skeleton drills. And you were talking about the importance of communication,
well,
as all coaches talk about the communication element and how critical it is. Coach, I suck at that, man. I've not been able to get my guys to call out the name of the guy. I mean, we're pretty good at saying your help or help left or help right, you know, if the ball's down and we're going to goose it out. Players don't even know what the word goose means anymore, do they? I mean, that's sad.
No, that's a new word.
You know, I'm going, you know, look at the film. Look, all you needed to do was goose it left, you know. Was he talking to you? Did he tell you where he was? And the kids are looking at me like I'm Chinese, you know. Nobody uses the word goose anymore, but
It's a hard thing to get the guys to call the guy's name out, but we're just trying to get them to communicate more. And you know, frankly, that's something I had heard years ago that Coach Krzyzewski didn't practice in basketball.
Okay.
Practice, like every time they pass, every time they picked, they had to call, tell everybody what they're doing. I'm picking to you, Joe. That type of thing. I'm passing a Bob, you know, that kind of thing, and calling the guy's name out, which is pretty cool, you know, that you can take these great high school Americans and discipline them into doing something like that. But we try to encourage that a little bit in our line drills. It's certainly not always perfect, but we're definitely always, we want guys talking, certainly.
So, Coach, I didn't quite do a great job of nailing you down when we talked last time. I have a quote written down here that you did a fair amount of 6v6, right about 2011, 2012, with 125 hours of podcast, we started to see guys, and I'm not, with the exception of scout team work, okay, but we saw guys moving away from 6v6, and I know that because of the kinship with Bill Tierney, you're running a lot of 4v4s and the Y drills and stuff like that. Can you talk a little bit about, in your planning, how you balance what you're going to do 6v6 and what dictates whether you're going to spend more time 6v6 versus, 4v4 in your even work?
Yeah, I mean, the 4v4
part of it.
That's a
pretty deep question, huh? Do you like that, Coach?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I mean, the 4v4 work is a great fundamental of a sport. I mean, the whole thing with 4v4 is that nobody can hide. Everybody's got to be doing something. And, when you break it down to a 4-on-4, you're teaching so much. Number one, you could see everybody's eyes. Are they watching the ball? Are they spreading the field? Are they dodging horizontally, or are they spreading so they can catch on the run? I think that's and again, there's nothing I'm saying here that I haven't taken from somebody else. I think that's the hardest thing to teach our guys is to spread the field, middies, when they want to dodge.
I know, wide De Niro.
Exactly, and catching the ball, we want to be able to catch the ball as we're going at our man. So, theoretically, most times if we're dodging, we want to catch the ball in front of us, we shouldn't have to make a big turn, to be able to, dodge a guy horizontally and then go strong to the goal. We want to catch the ball running downhill, so all those things you can really teach in 4-on-4. And, the other thing I think I've always 5-on-5. I think sometimes 6-on-6 gets a little crowded in there. In 5-on-5, you can really teach your crease sliding and, your triangles and clearing for each other. And, so I love 5-on-5 because it kind of completes your defense too. You can play your defensive philosophy, pretty much 100% with 5-on-5.
Well, when you add a slide, I've often run 4v4. And the offense moved the ball really well, and the defense made two good slides.
Right.
And the guy was open on the backside pipe, and the defenders are, looking at me, giving me the finger, Going, Coach, if I had another defender, somebody would have slid to this guy,
Right.
But, we were guarding guys up top, and they redirected it, whether it was up top or redirected it behind or whatever. Yeah, I mean, I've been remiss, I think, in my coaching of not implementing more 5v5, and my problem is, and I want to hear your comments, I may not run 6v6 all week, because
right.
We want to have that run and gun transition mentality and learn to manufacture transition. And I think guys are more likely to try and drive by a guy in a 4v4. Sometimes we'll actually run a 4v4 where you can't pass until you try and initiate a drive.
Right.
Teaching kids at the high school level or the U15 level, you don't need to be a great lacrosse player to drive.
Right.
I mean, you don't have to be able to go right and left proficiently. If kids want to run to the defender and dodge, that's the biggest thing to teach them is you just got to run, and then keep your head up and make that pass when you see, wherever the defender's coming from. But,
Mike, one of the neat things we did with the 4-on-4 this year, last year, whenever we started this, but particularly this fall, we did a, we would play games in 4-on-4. Whenever we do 4-on-4, we want the guys making at least three passes to get the thing going. We want to move it, maybe attack it, move it. But one of the things we did was a picking game. The guys had to, the only way you could score was off of a pick. Okay, so we would move the ball, and you couldn't score off a dodge. You had to score off of a pick or a pick and roll off of that pick. So it was an off ball pick, and you know, one of the lost arts in our sport that I know Coach Moran was great at back in the 70s was the back pick. You know, he'd have his creaseman sometimes 16 yards high setting back pick posts on people, you know. So I try to teach the kids some things that they maybe they haven't seen before, that a real effective pick sometimes is just to come up, put your back, you know, set the pick with your back, so now you can break to the goal, you know, the man you're picking for, he goes one way and you go the other way, and you're always seeing the ball, you know. And then the other part of that is that if we're setting the front pick in a game like that, I want the pick on the man, you know. I'd rather have our kids do a moving pick and then pull back from that. The tendency with kids, they don't want to make any body contact, so they come up and they set a pick a yard or two off the ball, and the guy just runs around, the defender runs around the pick. So, you know, I try to teach them to get a wide base, you know, get up, keep your hands, two hands on your stick tight to your body, stick straight up and down, but get a kind of a wide base and put the pick on the man. But, I thought when we did that, some 4-on-4, we might have done it 5-on-5, but it was awesome how the kids, you always like a drill where the kids kind of take to it. Like at first they're not doing great at it, and then they figure it out a little bit and they have a lot of fun with that. You know, how to like spread it a little bit, set that pick, cut and roll, and then all of a sudden you start seeing guys get those tight catches inside and finishes. And it teaches them also to finish in front of the goal, catch in front of the goal. You know, I know Matt Brown talks about that a lot with Denver, that, you know, you got to be able to catch. You got to be subtle, pick, roll, and be able to catch your feet inside. And I thought that really, once we did that 4-on-4 a little bit, we started seeing that in our 6-on-6 game a lot.
Well, and I think two great points. Number one is practicing picks is boring as all get out, you know. And once you establish the fundamentals, like a college team maybe in the fall or at a high school team, you know, in Atlanta in January, but in the Midwest or the East Coast in February, you know, by doing it inside of a 4v4, number one, it truly emulates a game scenario, right? And number two, the kids have freedom, you know, to kind of freelance a little bit, and
right,
you're still working on picks, but it's in a fun format, if that makes sense.
Right. And you know, when you play college ball and then you go out and you play club ball, you start doing things like that just by a sense of the game a little more.
Right.
And you're giving them that freedom a little bit, and then they realize how it works, you know. And the other thing is all the influx of everybody's seeing these Canadian players right now. 9 out of 10 of them come down here, and they turn out to be our leading scorers. That's why. You know, they're great inside. They're great off a pick. They don't feel checks. You know, they grew up taking checks from hockey and lacrosse and all that. And, you know, that's what the great players do. They're tough inside. And but I thought that enhanced our fall tremendously, working on those picks and rolls. And again, you can't shoot it. And it helps the feeders. It gets everybody's eyes up a little bit. You know, we have normally we want to move the ball every 2 or 3 seconds, but there are times in this, maybe you have the ball 4 seconds. You make a move or so you can let the guy free his hands off the pick. And then the other thing we do with a drill like that, or in anything, our rule generally speaking is when you're inside of 7-8 yards, we don't want you bouncing the ball. You know, I think that's, you know, that the bouncing the ball inside is just overused. It's, you know, kids just, it's an easy way out. I catch the ball, I bounce the ball, and you hit the goalie in the feet, you hit him in the legs, the guy gets lucky, whatever, makes a great save. But the point is, inside of 7 yards, we want you seeing net. You know, we want you seeing net, putting it on the cage. Doesn't mean you can't bounce the ball, but You know, you want to shoot it off hip. You want to put it in the goal. You want to put it on the goal. That's the other thing. I don't want guys missing the cage when they get a shot inside the 12 yards. So, again, I think that's another coaching point in that. Spreading out, you know, off the ball, giving the guy room to set that pick for you, setting up that pick, cutting off, making that catch. The other thing that was brought up in the clinic the other day that I've always kind of believed, maybe from playing box lacrosse years ago, but catching the ball off your ear, catching it deep, you know, getting the bottom hand out a little bit, but the top hand back off your ear. You know, I think kids are taught at a young age right now to point the top of the stick at the ball. And, you know, and it's a great coaching technique when you're 7 years old. Okay, but now when you're on the crease or you're cutting to a ball and you point your stick at the ball, now you got to catch it, bring it back, and shoot it. By the time you brought it back, you're getting checked. You know, I'd rather catch it deep, take the check, and then shoot. You know, you kind of throw that check across my stick and hip, my hands are back, and now I take that check, and then I follow through with my shot, and your stick is rebounding a little bit off me at that point. And I think those are all the coaching points you can bring up in those 4-on-4s, 5-on-4s, whatever, you know. The other thing that we do a lot of now is we'll do 4-on-4s and 5-on-5, and we'll say you have to set a pick on the ball. So whereas that last game we talked about was you have to score from an off-ball pick, now we have to dodge off of a pick to initiate. You know, so whether we're 4-on-4 or 5-on-4, we have to go with a pick, come off the pick, and then the next man's got to clear through, and then we got to help to the ball and, you know, move the ball around the perimeter to get it to the backside type of thing. But, again, we'll play that game where, okay, guys, you're going to make, you know, and sometimes I'll tell them, I want to see 8 or 9 passes. Defense, pressure out a little bit for our first 8 or 9 passes. Just make us, it's not about the pressure so much, but make us catch and throw like we would in a game with a little bit of pressure. And then now we're gonna spread you, attack you on the run, off of a pick, move the ball, look for a shot or something off the backside or inside, obviously.
All right, man. Now I got to ask you a philosophical question.
Yeah.
And something that I don't think I've come close to mastering as a coach. You know, when we talked before in 2011, you know, and you even referenced Tambroni. You were just starting to see the more, and obviously Bates, you know, when he was at Drexel and then going to Princeton, you know, guys said that if you were going to play them, you really had to prepare for the two-man games back. And there's more coaches than that. That's just two that come to mind.
Yeah,
you know, we're so, and I get this question on my website all the time, and I'm really anxious to hear or maybe you do it with something as simple as a call. You know, when we talked before in your skeleton work, you know, we were very, very deft at, you know, the wide turns and running through the catch and running to the pass or running when we pass and all that kind of stuff, those critical fundamentals. But we also were focusing when a guy was going to drive that we had the adjacent guy clearing out.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And you talked at that time about a me call, a you call, maybe a tap to helmet means I'm going to drive, or a, you know, some other signal that letting the adjacent guy know so that he would clear out of that space.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that I've done a good job of integrating, and maybe even you, Coach, are you doing a significantly more pick work than you were doing in 2011 in terms of the nature of your offense?
Yeah.
My question is this: how do you find that balance? You know, I mean, if you had, and like I said, I get this question all the time on the website. You know, and with the advent of Jamie Monroe and 3D and all these guys running motion and people trying to emulate the Loyola offense and all that stuff. You know, if we've got our kids intuitively schooled, you know, to clear out when a guy drives and for the backside adjacent guy to fill or mirror that space, which I know things you subscribed to back in 2011.
Yes.
How do you change all that into a pick game, either on ball or off ball? And is there a way that you can blend those two, or have you blended those two, or are we just running picks, or we're running, I hate to even use the word motion anymore because it's so overplayed and it, you know, means something different to every coach, you know.
Right.
But do you integrate motion and your pick play, or is it either a two-man game or an off-ball pick, or we're going to run, you know, motion for lack of a better term, understanding what a lousy term that is?
Right.
Now I'll turn
it
over to you. Does that question make sense?
Yeah, perfectly. I think the first thing that we teach, and you know, I feel like most coaches teach now, but no matter what your system is, you know, whether it's a 3-1 offense or a 2-2 offense or anything, I think some of these fundamentals are getting around there a little bit. I think everybody's spreading the field. Everybody's, you know, attacking from high, all those things. So the first thing we got to teach our guys is the fundamentals of working together on that. And just like you say, you know, we dodge, you know, we need to make space for the dodger. We need to help. We need to give outlets to both sides of the ball. You know, we call it spinning the ball. We can dodge. We can spin it. We can turn back and go the other way. We can go through X. I think coaches are becoming even better now at just shooting the ball all the way through to the backside. But all that balance type of thing has got to be there first. We got to teach that first. Spreading the field, working together, everybody seeing the ball. I mean, that in itself can take a whole fall to teach, you know. Now, the pick thing to me doesn't change any of that. You're adding, you know, basically that 2-3 man visual, and everybody's got to be visual on this, but everybody's got to see what's going on. But you know, if I pick for you and you're dodging to your right, whether it be as an attackman or as a middie, all right, we've got to recognize that on that same side very early and give space for that dodger. So even though I mean, normally you may dodge without a pick. Now I'm setting a pick and we're doing the same type of movement. Whatever our offense is, we're still getting that balance, but we need to clear a little bit, you know, for that man. So I don't think adding the pick in it changes things an awful lot in terms of your fundamentals off the ball of giving space for the dodger, cutting back door, filling point behind or filling the point up top so we can reverse the ball type of thing. You know, some people are, for example, if you're in a 23 offense and I'm talking two men up top and you pick for that middy up top, you know, some people may pop their crease middie out. You know, some people may, maybe not pick and follow with the other middie, not the crease middie type of thing. But yeah, it doesn't change what we do as a general offense, just because we've added a pick. And, as far as the me, you, you know, we still do that. I don't think our guys are calling that terminology all the time in a game, but we get them that understanding of communication. And, I think I might have told you that me, you thing came from Coach Emmer back in the 80s. I remember hearing him talking about, I don't know what he called it, but the four basic moves you can do in the game. One is, if you have the ball and you're dodging, I call that a drive with our guys, like a basketball drive. You know, you have your basic drive or dodge, and then off the ball, you can clear for somebody, or you can pick off the ball, or you can pick for the ball. So we kind of show our guys in our base offenses or formation, you know, what the four major parts of the game are. We can dodge. I can ask you for a pick for me, and that's what I'd say, me, Mike, and me, and then you're gonna go backdoor on your man, then set that pick. We don't want horizontal picks. We want you to cut hard to the
right.
goal, come back and set that pick, and that would be a me. If I wanted a pick for you, I'll throw you the ball. I'll say you, Mike, and I'll throw you the ball, and then I'll pick for you. Again, in a game situation, I don't think our guys are saying all these things, but I think if we practice things enough, they're doing it with a little bit of, and now I do hear our guys saying those things a little bit, looking at each other, hey you, hey me, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, I think the clear is understood. And then obviously you got picks of ways that you can do as well. But yeah, that I feel like that kind of communication has worked out well.
So it's basically a call, you know. I mean, like I said, the questions that we're getting on the website, does it make sense, Coach? I mean, guys are going, you know, how do I, or you know, I'm running my motion, but now, you know, we may have set a pick, you know, somewhere and had some success, and I want the kids to go back to it.
I think, Mike, that the answer to that is...
It's hard to get a high school kid to be intuitive or recognize that his teammates, let's say on the U-Call, you know, it's hard for a high school kid to recognize, you know, you throw it to the guy and he drives the other way, but your intention was to set a pick because, you know, he thought we were spinning the ball three passes and then we were going to reverse it and come to a backside, I mean, whatever it turns out to be, you know.
I think, number one, first of all, if you just talk about picking tickets, they'll never do it. I think they have to see where it works. And that's where I really love that little 4-on-4 thing we did this fall. Our guys started loving it. Like at first they run around with their heads off. All of a sudden they start talking and picking and rolling and cutting. Once they see they can score goals off of that and it's fun setting picks on people, I mean, most kids don't want to set a pick. You might hit them. You know, you might step on their feet or something. It just seems to me it's hard getting them to do it. Once they do it and they have some success with it. Now, as far as in a 6-on-6 situation, here's where it kind of plays into me a little bit. If we're in our 23 offense, you know, a 2-3-1, and we're playing with a midi on the crease and we bang the ball around one time and now our right, you know, our midi dodges to his right up top, right? He dodges to his right. And now we got things in motion, right? We're clearing. We'll bring the point attackman to the ball. We bang it to him. Our far attackman goes behind the goal. We bang it to him. Our top midi might fade to the backside. Or you might have your creaseman fade to the backside type of thing, and then we like to attack real wide in that. But the bottom line is we try to get our kids in the mindset, too, that we want to set up those dodges from up top off of some ball movement. So we might, you know, we might bang it, or we might dodge the top, move it, and then get it to up top again, right? So when we get it up top to that midi on that high dodge, I think that's where his teammate next to him, he's already recognizing that, hey, maybe you're left-handed. So say we go counterclockwise with the ball, right, and your midi up top is a lefty, you know, that kid next to him, as that ball swings, he might already be coming to you to set that pick.
Yeah.
Okay. And I get it, you know, that it's difficult getting any kids, it's not just high school kids, to communicate or to be willing to do that. But I think that's where you kind of break it down. You do your 3-on-3s, you do it 4-on-4s. When they realize they're successful. Now, the one thing that verbally, what I say to our guys, and I think this catches with them a little bit, I tell them, guys, watch basketball right now. I don't care if it's Carolina, Duke, Michigan State, You watch all the great basketball teams right now. They almost do nothing without a high post pick. You know, it's like they do it out of transition. They do it out of, you know, it's just incredible how if you watch Duke play, you watch, they're moving the ball. I don't care what offense they're in.
Well, even more in the pros.
Yeah, in the pros as well. And that pick might go all, if the defense, you know, pressures you, I mean, they're picking you from two steps inside the midcourt line in basketball. And, you know, I think our guys can relate to that a little bit. They watch a little bit of basketball. Hey, guys, watch this great game tonight. They're picking 70-80% of the time. Guys, why do you think they're doing that? You know, I feel like if you watch, when you're coaching out there and, hey, players, watch this. Every time we set a pick, something good happens. You know, and it's, I think that, you know, I know with my guys is the good players always feel like they don't need a pick, right? I'm a good player because I'm quick, okay? So I don't need a pick. And then I'm like, hey, guys, watch Seth Curry. Watch them picking for Seth Curry. Because when they pick, all hell breaks loose. You've taken two defenders out of the play. You already have a third defender looking to help, trying to figure out what's going to happen off that pick. And people get open all over the place. So, I don't know. I think we've gotten better at that. We're not perfect at it, but our guys pick a lot more than we used to. And now you look at, you know, I know last year our great opponents, you know, and I don't want to mention anybody because, you know, you feel like you're dropping names or you're speaking for them, but, you know, I think Lynchburg is a great example, though. I mean, great coach, Coach Kudelka, and, you know, they go to the national championship game and constantly picking over the top for attackmen, you know, from the top corners. In front of the goal, attackmen become in midfield positions. All of a sudden they set that pick, the righty comes over, everybody's looking because the boy had 116 goals last year. Just a you know, broke the NCAA record. What a great shooter type of thing. But, it's something always seems to happen good as long as people are spacing right away from the ball. You see, Duke and lacrosse has been doing a lot of that little 2- and 3-man games where other people away from the ball are getting a little bit of motion to spread you away from that a little bit.
Well, and that was a big part of the essence with Tambroni way back in the day, too.
Yeah, great. At Cornell, I thought the best with those picks from behind. I think I was talking about that, right, when obviously, Rob Pinnell was there, and another big 6'3 attackman, and those guys work off each other incredibly. You know, picks, pops, you know, they come off the pick, they try to break the door down, go at the defenseman, you know, move the ball. Just everything good seems to happen off of those picks. So.
Hey, man, listen, let's change gears.
Okay.
Good advice, and I think, you know, obviously today's kids, as most coaches recognize, learn by doing, you know, not so much by your lecture. You know, integrating that into the 4v4 on and off is absolutely huge. Kind of funny how all things old sometimes come back, isn't it, Coach? When
no
you've been
question.
Around 35, yeah. 30, 40 years. You know?
There's nothing new out there. I mean, Coach Parenty said that at the convention the other day, that we're pulling stuff out from 20 and even 30 years ago, and then it runs the cycle, and then somebody else does it. And so, go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry.
Oh, no worries, Coach. I love listening to you. A new twist on a transition drill or a something different that you picked up that you put in last year or this fall that maybe you hadn't run traditionally?
I would say just a couple of little things that we've been doing that other teams are doing. Again, I've stolen everything, most of what we do certainly, but not so much a transition drill, but we do a little bit of 3-on-2 game inside the soccer circle in the middle of the field. We'll put the goal inside that circle, and the guys have to make at least one pass. Sometimes two passes to get started, and what, little competitive drills where you're in the box or in the circle for a three-on-two for 10, 15 seconds, or we might give them three opportunities. So you got red team against white team, and three-on-two, you know, red against white, and bang, we may give them four opportunities, but three balls, you know, one after the other to get a shot off and go again at their man type of thing. We may stay with the red team for a couple of minutes, or we may alternate every one. White team's on offense, red team's on offense on the next. That's been a great little competitive inside drill right there.
You know, that's kind of interesting. We've talked a lot over the last 15 or 16 months. You know, we call it crunching the field for just because, you know, coaches have their own word, kind of the Canadian influence in the tight spaces. It used to be in the box. You know, now we're seeing guys run it inside the restraining lines, you know.
Right.
I mean, that crunch area continues to drop down. I know JB, you know, runs a lot of that stuff at Limestone. We've got some crunch drills on our site that are back to top from Limestone. And then Coach Bates runs it side to side.
Right.
You know, he'll
right.
put, you know, and run right and left, kind of toggling back and forth.
Yes. Yeah.
And then, I'll tell you, I meant to mention this to you off the air. You know, we were talking, the nature of the dialogue between me and Coach was, you know, sometimes the greatest information isn't always the big name coaches. You know, there's a lot of creative guys out there. You know, we had a nice little crunch drill inside the hash marks from Colfer at Cabrini.
Right.
That's on the website that, again, you know, coaches, if you try this with your players, you know, in the first day, it's a cluster. Smile nicely and tell your kids that they may not get it the first day. We're going to come back in 2 days and run it again. You know, this is something Coach and I talked about back in 11. You know, in the old days, we would run that drill till everybody died and put the headlights on the field, you know, till they got it right. I think the philosophy now is, you know, introduce it to them, let them get the hang of it. You know, nobody gets better by being frustrated, you know.
Right, right.
And that goes, you know, coaches are banging buckets with sticks, you know, and screaming. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, just
well, that's
introduce
the
new
thing,
drill.
Like,
let the kids
right.
get the hang of it,
yeah.
you know, and then come
First
back.
Of all, it's not going to look good right away. Second of all, one of the things that I've learned is a drill can work with a team for me in 2013. In 2014, they can't do it. And I might even feel like we're more talented. But it's crazy to me how sometimes man up, sometimes, you know, particular drills will work with one team and not with another team. You know, it's, so like you say, I'm not going to run the same drill every year if it's not somewhat working. And,
so Coach, when you run the 3v2 yeah. inside the soccer circle.
Yeah.
Are your poles strictly playing defense, or is that one of the ones where you're splitting a team up and the poles are playing offense?
I think we'll always say, like, max two poles. So you can have two poles on D and one short, one pole and two shorts, but it's totally competitive. They're jumping in. They're going 10 seconds at a time. 15, say, you know, you can do that any way you want. You can go, you can give them a ball to get a shot off. You can give them three balls, or you can do it for 45 seconds, as many balls as they can do it, but that's a real fighting drill in there. They, you know, in a tight soccer circle with a cross goal in there, that's just a good competitive drill, and you got to be.
But you
smart.
Let the poles play offense in that drill is my question.
No more than one. Anytime we do a drill like that, some people do two, three poles on a drill, depending on, but I try to keep it to one pole in an offensive drill. You know, sometimes two if it's more numbers, obviously. But in a 4-on-3 or a 3-on-2 like that, we're just going to have one pole on offense. That's the way I do it. But,
yeah, the rest of the team standing around the circle yelling and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can do this with 50 guys, you know. I think if we do that drill, we might do something, like you say, in the restraining box and then the other half of the team playing in the circle and then flip-flop them.
Okay.
But, you brought up an interesting point, though. Here we talk about spreading the field and field lacrosse, attacking from wide to narrow, right? Getting guys wide.
I know where you're going with this.
Exactly. But again, that 4-on-4 picking drill we do, we'll put cones maybe 5 to 7 yards inside the restraining lines and make them play in a tight area like box lacrosse or like basketball. And, you know, and that's the kind of the yin and the yang of our sport, you know. So anyway, just.
Yeah, we tell our kids, if you can score 3v2 inside of this little area, when the field is spread out, you're going to feel like the first time your dad lets you drive without him in the car.
Right. I mean, that's a.
You roll down the window, you turn on the radio, you get the freedom. Yeah, it's all good.
So we're spreading the field to try to get into a 3-on-2 situation somewhere else. You know, that's what we're doing, guys, right? Another drill, and again, this is a total steal, you know, for me, but you know.
Share, Coach. We call
it
sharing. It's not stealing.
Sharing.
Stealing's bad. Well, sharing's good.
Dave Cottle, many years ago, I heard him say that, good coaches are just great thieves from other good coaches' ideas, and I think that's totally true. But, this is a great little drill. You know, a little ground ball drill. You put, you know, red against white, and you blow a whistle, and on the first whistle, these guys are both playing man. They're not playing the ball. Okay, so coach got the ball. You and I are going one-on-one. And there's no ball there, so I've got to take your body, you've got to take my body, and then the coach could throw a ball down at that point and blow a second whistle, or just throw the ball down, and now we go after the ball. You know, and what we're trying to get there is guys to play the man ball. You know, I felt like when I got to Cortland in 1969, the first drill we did that every day with Coach Emmer. I mean, 2-on-1 ground ball. Everybody, you know, started the sport doing that. Kids will not take the body on a ground ball anymore, you know, unless you really teach them that. So, you know, now you have to take the body, you know, and we got to be a little careful because, you got to do it kind of within the rules. And to save a little bit of injury on that, I can't have two guys bull moosing it and cracking another guy's collarbone on this. But so it gets a little competitive. You get into your man first, then I throw the ball down within 5 yards of you, and then you go after the ball, and you get a little physical with it. And I find that that's been a great drill.
It's a 1v1. Is that right, Coach?
Yeah, so it's a 1v1 ground ball. But instead
but
of
no
just
ground ball on the
throwing
ball.
The ball down, you know, we got to take body first, okay? Now you can move that into your 2-on-1 ground ball, man ball drill a little bit. But you're getting all those, you know, kids that don't want to, you know, that, like, you know, let's face it. I mean, back when lacrosse started on Long Island, every kid played football back in the 50s and 60s. So when they started lacrosse, everybody knew how to take the body a little bit, you know, but now you've got some kids that never played football, never wrestled. Some of them never played basketball. And now you're asking to body check somebody that they don't have a clue with that. So just getting them a little physical in that. And I find that gets our guys having fun with playing a ground ball properly now and getting a little physical with it. The one interesting thing, Mike, is I don't know how many times I'm not criticizing officials at all by saying this, but I really believe maybe it's the heat of the game and the speed of the game now, but a lot of times officials within 5 yards of the ball won't let you body check somebody or interfere with somebody. They think it's an interference instead of a good man ball play. Right.
I don't think there's any question,
I'm a
10-year
once a game, you know.
Yeah, I'm a 10-year official, and I can tell you that, you know, focus points are directly related to that, especially at U15 in high school, you know, because their intention is good. They're trying to protect the player.
Right.
You know, but the art of screening, you know, somebody on a ground ball or if
it's
you're
a
not
lost
necessarily,
art. It's a lost
you know,
art.
Cracking them, but if you're just working hard at getting your butt in front of their butt, like we do with our face-off guys sometimes, you know.
Right, right.
Sure,
you know, butt-to-butt drill, and then drop the ball, let them get, exactly.
You know, it's just, you know, they're blowing the whistle.
Right. Right. You know, another little short cage drill that everybody does, 4-on-3 short cages, et cetera, 3-on-2s and all that. And, you know, we do a little bit of, you know, short cage where we'll put 2 attackmen on the white team, two attackmen on the red team, say, and I hope I can explain myself quickly with this, but, we might put we'll have midi lines, you know, 2 white midi lines on outside of one cage, 2 red midi lines on the other side, and in those midi lines you put your long poles. We'll put 2 lines of defensemen behind the goal. Bottom line is we'll do a 4-on-3 break only using 2 attackmen. So, you know, short cages, 60 yards apart, good drill to get guys with their sticks up and running the 4-on-3. But now your middies have to be the point man. So you don't have 3 attackmen in. You got 2 attackmen in, and your middies and long poles, when they go down the field, one of them's got to get down early and be the, be the point man.
I like that.
And what I think a little bit what works good with that is sometimes you're not even with us at times. We might start the year with 9 attackmen. One guy gets hurt, and this guy gets hurt. All of a sudden, you're not that deep on attack. Now you can put 2 good players on one end of the field, 2 good players on the other. Maybe alternate. If you got 8 attackmen, you can go 2s and 2s.
Yeah.
And they're getting a lot of low work coming to the ball type of thing. But
how do you start that drill, Coach? Is that a goalie outlet to one of the
middle? Yeah, goalie outlet. We'll go to the goal 4-on-3, and then we'll have the nearest defender upfield. Now, when we do that drill too, we'll start with a shorty and 2 poles defensively. Okay, we'll just demand that we always start with a shorty and 2 poles. The shorty can be in the low spots too. You know, we'd like them to learn those low spots as well as the high spots. And then rather than saying the point man gets out, you know, off on the break on the next one, we'll say the next highest guy, the next guy out. So, for example, at times, say you had even a short stick playing the point defensively and the shooter kind of took the ball and, you know, was shooting the ball and that short stick was playing that shooter a little bit going to the goal. Well, maybe that low defenseman, he's in position to just bust up the field. And then we'll bring one guy the red defenseman busts up the field to one side. Another red guy will come out of the far line and get into the break. So we're kind of integrating, getting
out.
Yeah,
Coach, the defense with the 3 players, where does that shorty enter the drill from?
We'll just tell the guys we've got to have a shorty in every time, you know. So we may start with 2 lines of defensemen, and you can do this a lot of different ways. You can have nobody in particular be a defenseman too. You can mix your middies, but just to make this easy, like over the phone a little bit, I'll put 2 lines of defensemen behind the goal,
right?
You know, getting ready to go. 2 lines of middies, you know, 1 to the right and 1 to the left, maybe 3 yards, goal line extended up, okay? And now those 2 defensemen will fill in to be the low spots. One of those middies will just jump in. You have to, I don't know if I'm explaining that right, Mike, but, you know, one team's breaking up the field. That midi, we just need one midi just jumping and getting ready to play the thing coming the other way.
Okay.
So it's just a habit, you know. Hey guys, sometimes again, this is one of those drills you gotta work with them a little bit, otherwise they'll forget to get in there and that kind of thing. But we're just trying to get the middies to play the different defense spots as well, and we're trying to say also it doesn't have to be the defender that's covering the shooter on the shot that's got to get out. You know, a lot of times, yes, you're the guy that's first out. Sometimes you're not the guy first out. So getting your defenseman not to be lazy, they get up the field too, from the backside at times.
the two attackmen are at the one end of the field, do they just stay in the rep, or are you rotating those guys every time? Or, I mean, are they standing, or are you having them go up and touch the midfield line and come back? Or?
You know, it's so quick repetition that they don't really have time to get up that far. I mean,
I love the quick part, yeah.
Yeah, you can have them tag a line, you can have them, you know, it's a good idea to do that. And yes, you could do that. If you had your goal 60 yards apart or 50 yards apart, they would probably have time to, you know, touch a flat cone and get up and get back. And,
right.
You know, and I think the hardest thing to teach with fast breaks is to have your low guys as well as your point man on a break sprinting back, seeing the ball, and then coming to the ball, right? And then instead of just standing flat-footed or backpedaling, you know, with the ball.
Yeah, no doubt.
And that's the kind of drill, too, that we just demand that our attackmen are constantly coming upfield. Those low attackmen, they're not allowed to, even if they're wide open, they're not allowed to just stand flat foot and shoot. They've got to step upfield and get in that habit. And, yeah, plenty of times you can score a goal without even moving your feet, but it just becomes a habit to guys. So we want them to make that big step of champions up top.
Yeah, we tell them the closer you are to the crease, the more important it is you move your feet.
Right.
You know, I mean.
Right. And,
man, Coach, we've been at it an hour. I can't believe it went so fast.
Have we? That's great.
Hey, at the time of this podcast, Coach is getting ready for a well-earned retirement, but at least in 2016 summer, we'll be running the camps, which have a great reputation, incidentally, at Hampton, Sydney. Coach, just give us a 10-second rundown on the camps. It's not necessarily a team camp. It's kind of a developmental camp, right?
Yeah, it is, Mike. We go 3 days, and frankly,
how's the food there? Is the food good?
The food, yeah. I mean, the facilities are fantastic. We have turf, we have lights, we have grass, all new. Food, the dining hall's new. It's the food is awesome. You know, the bottom line is when we started my camps back in the 80s. The whole idea was we wanted to be a great shooting camp. So any camp I've ever run, we do a lot of shooting, whether it would be with long poles, but mostly with short poles, obviously. And, you know, I'm kind of proud to say there was a neat article by Paul Rabel written a few years ago that, actually last year, that spoke to a camp that he went to back in the 90s up at Gettysburg. And Coach Jancic and I would always do a shooting goalie camp together up there, and evidently Paul was 14 when he was at the camp, and I didn't remember the name of the camp, but we learned some great fundamentals at it. And, you know, I hate to mention that, but it was a really cool article, and I kind of remember these young kids coming from, I believe, the mat that he went, and, you know, we just really taught getting that stick up on shooting and, you know, some of the off-hip shooting and some of the things I talked about not bouncing the ball inside of 7 yards and seeing the net and putting it on the goal and learning how to, just the fundamentals of pinpointing your shots thousands of times until you can, I learned some cool things, I think, playing box lacrosse many years ago from some of the great Canadian players. And so that's always been an emphasis of any camp that I've run. Usually we have 50, 60, sometimes 70 boys at a camp, and we really do a lot of that small group shooting and then one-on-one defensive stuff and, you know, just some goalie, just some good one-on-one goalie teaching type of thing. And then obviously we're playing games and then small-sided games like these 4-on-4s and 4-on-3s. You know, and then the last thing I would say, just about camps in general is, you know, a few years ago I had a boy call me and he says, Coach, I want to come to Hampton, Sydney or Washington Lee. And, are you going to see me play this summer? And I said, well, you know, where are you going to be? And he says, well, I'm going to be in New England at these three camps. And I said to him, you know, why don't you go to the Washington Lee camp? You want to go to Washington Lee, you know, take one camp, go to Washington Lee, one camp, go to Hampton, Sydney. And I think that's something that a lot of kids forget that, you know.
We promote that on our site.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Go see, you know, go put yourself before that coach if that's a sincere interest of you.
Well,
you
and that campus and that setting, and that, you know. Campus. I mean,
yeah.
Some guys
yeah.
don't like to, you know, they go to school out in a rural setting at a D3 or, you know, all these smaller D2s that are out there now. And, you know, they come back when there's nothing to do in this town. You know, and
right.
and they go to a different school, and you're going like, why did you figure that out when you were a sophomore? Why didn't you figure it out before? You know,
right.
I mean,
right. It's the funniest thing, you know, and the other thing is kids don't get burned out at camps. I mean, I think kids go to 6-7 events in the summertime. They can't even perform. So, you know, part of it's they're not having fun. Second part of it is nobody's going to see them at their best doing that. You know, keep your energy. You know, do 3-4 events and make sure you spread them out and you're ready to you're
no,
ready
we,
to play.
On the site, we actually are a proponent of maybe not playing as much travel ball and going to camps at schools you're interested in, you know,
right.
and learn the coaches' personalities, get a feel for the campus, you know, the academics, take a tour while you're there, do all those kind of things we think are more important than travel ball. And this is coming from a guy that's coached national travel ball for 5 years. So
right, anyway. Right. I'm all for it. I mean, it's great. Get on a travel team, go to a big recruiting camp, and you know. But again, I've always said to kids too is if you go to that camp and all you're thinking about is who's going to see me play, you know, you're going to be miserable. You know, you go to the recruiting camp to see how you fare with players around the country. And you go and you play hard and you enjoy it, you know, and you do it the right way and everything else will fall into place for you. So,
Coach, I got 5 pages of notes here, man. Unbelievable. Continued success to you. Congratulations on all your awards and your accolades and heartfelt, humble thanks for all you've done for our site and the information you've contributed. It has helped thousands of coaches, but more importantly, has had a big impact on my teams and my coaches and any success that I've been blessed to have. Like I said, the skeleton drill last time and the way you were doing it and the different things you were doing it has helped me immensely. So, yeah, for the listeners, go back and look at that stuff from 2011. Just put Coach Roston in the search box and they'll give you everything. For information on the camps, we've got all these links listed on the site on the interview page. Do all that, and again, Coach, nothing but the best to you and your future, and we sure appreciate you coming on.
Mike, thank you a lot. It's a pleasure being on here, and thanks very much.
Well, there's a lot of great coaches out there, man, and you're at the top of the list. Coach, stay on the line with me here as we sign off. Hey, LaxCoachMike.com. Hey, man, remember, you got an unbelievable responsibility influencing the lives of these young people. Take it seriously. Until next time, God bless everybody.